So I'm going to start this. My name is Jill Wolf. I am 38 years old. Today is July 4th, 2017. I'm in Portland, Oregon at the Waterfront Blues Festival, and my relationship to my partners is fellow colleagues and friends.
I'm Cynthia Thomas. I'm 65 years old. The date is 4th of July, 2017. I'm in Portland, Oregon at the Waterfront Blues Festival, and my relationship to my partner is I'm his wife.
Hello, I'm Tom Beidinger. I'm 72 years old. Today's the 4th of July, 2017. We're at the Portland Blues Festival at the Riverfront, and my relationship to Cynthia is I'm her husband.
Guys, I'm so excited to see you. I was sitting here testing people in Waterfront Blues and Upwalk these faces that I know, and I saw my friend Maggie's face in your face. And I'm here testing people who are at risk for Hep C. And you have a story about Hep C. You have a connection to it. Could you tell me just a little bit about that, what it means to you?
Sure. Our daughter Maggie is living in Seattle, Washington. She was born in Denton, Texas. And it was 1981, and they weren't testing blood at that time. Maggie was very premature. She weighed 3 pounds. And in the course of her NICU treatments, she had some blood transfusions and got Hep C. Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not sure which, she didn't know until a couple of years ago. She had tried to give blood several times, and she was always would to be found anemic, so she wouldn't go past the first test. And then one day she passed, and they drew her blood and then tested it, and several weeks later she got a letter in the mail, which she almost threw away. Instead, she opened it and got the distressing news that she was Hep C positive. Consequently, we were at the Blues Festival one day and saw the Caring Ambassadors booth, and we walked by and said, oh, we should get tested. And then we were like, no, let's just keep going. And then we got about a few yards away and said, this is stupid. We should go get tested. And we did. And fortunately, my husband and I and our sons were negative. Maggie had to struggle really hard to get treatment. Her insurance company denied her. And Maggie, as a preemie, was called Perseverance, Percy for short, and that's what she does. And she kept on until she got treatment. And thanks to that treatment and Caring Ambassadors and Jill and all of her friends, she's cured, and we're very grateful.
Hey, you have a new nickname for your daughter, Percy. That's so exciting. And tell me a bit, you know, you guys walked past, you saw this Caring Ambassador sign, and I remember seeing you guys, I guess it was last year or the year before that, and you walked up to me, you said, we saw a sign, right? You saw a sign, but you walked past the sign, the literal sign, and you came back because you saw a sign. Tell me why you walked past it the first time.
Well, basically, in many cases, you really don't want to know bad news. And although that wasn't likely that either one of us would have had Hep C, there was always a possibility. We've all had blood transfusions, and it's sort of a possibility. And when you read signs that say that a goodly number of people that were born before a certain time could have it, you know, everybody should get tested. It's just that you think, oh, my God, if I get positive, you know, it's like a death sentence, which it really isn't. It's a setback in life. But we walk by, and the more we walk by, we started talking about it, and we said, this is stupid. And so we went back, and we got tested, and subsequently we were both negative, which was expected, but very pleasing to hear. But the whole experience was very, very positive, working with ambassadors and working with this organization. So we were happy about our results, and we were at the same time concerned about Megan, and now our daughter is also free, and it makes it a whole lot better all the way around.
Yeah, she's cured. And part of the reason she's cured, you know, when we met, I tested both of you, actually, I think. And I guess I'm a feisty girl or something. We built a relationship, and it was enough that I asked you to have your daughter call me because she wasn't in the best place in that moment, right? And I was lucky enough to share space with Maggie and Percy and collect her story in the actual booth, right? And so I got to hear from her end what you know, I'm sorry, mom came over and said, here, call this person. And she kind of went through her process. But tell me what, as the mom, what was going on for you when we met, we tested you, you did not have exposure, but your kid did. And then tell me just sort of what went through your mind and what happened from there.
Well, I guess like every mom, you want nothing bad to happen to your children. And of course I, you know, was responsible for her having blood transfusions, so you automatically feel guilty. And then she's like, Mom, if you hadn't given me the blood transfusions, I would have been dead then. So I think I've gotten some pretty good 30-something years, you know. And I think in some ways for her, it was almost better that she didn't know until she had a certain degree of maturity. But it was really, really hard on her. She was very, very depressed. Not clinically, I guess, but for that time when she couldn't get treatment. I would like to say, too, that caring is a key word in caring ambassadors, because when we met Jill the first time, we were freaked out about Maggie and ourselves, and they explained to us they would email us and send us a letter with the results of our tests. Instead, Jill found us as we were walking away and said, come back, we're going to tell you right now. And that really kind of sealed our feelings for the program, and especially for Jill. And we volunteered in the booth 1 year, and this year we slacked off, but we got to spend some time with her and Maggie here at the Blues Fest last year, and it's just a very positive experience.
Yeah, this is no slacking off. Okay, you didn't come and sweat under the sun and say, hey, come get tested, but you came in here and you said hi to me, and we got an opportunity to sit and share stories this way. Like, talk about seeing a sign, right? That's so cool. So, you know, you talk about the mother's guilt, right? And you did nothing wrong, but you birthed a child, and it lived in the blood and tissue supply for 30 years before we ever found it. So you did, we didn't know what we didn't know, right? And Maggie persevered, right, as she does. What would you say to people, and I talk to people, so many who say, oh yeah, no, Hep C, that has nothing to do with me. What would you say to people your age or younger or older who say that? I'm going to start with you, my friend.
Well, first of all, I think you have to be really optimistic, and if you had lived in a, maybe in a cloister your whole life, if you've had sex, unprotected sex, if you've done any kind of needle things with drugs, if you've had any kind of blood exposure, it's a possibility that it could happen. And we'd all like to think that we don't have those things happening, but it does happen to many people. So getting tested is so easy, and it doesn't even cost anything. So I would highly recommend doing it. It's given the percentages, it's just stupid not to do it, particularly people that have gone through, like, from 1950 on. It's very likely, or very possible at least.
Same thing, especially when we volunteered at the booth. The number of people that would say, oh, I don't need to get tested, was just mind-boggling, because, again, Caring Ambassadors was giving a free test, and they have the huge list of people that are at risk, and it's just about 100% of people walking on the planet. So I don't understand why people want to be in denial.
And, you know, some of the misconception, you know, certainly drug use is certainly something that we think of when we think of Hep C. And to a certain degree, that's accurate. But that's not what happened with your daughter. And for so many people, because it was in the blood and tissue supply in our country, then maybe used a drug but had nothing to do with Hep C, and maybe very much didn't use a drug. What's it like for you as a mom, and maybe you've talked to your daughter about this, and for Maggie, who Hep C, the only people it affects are people who have blood, right? Whether you use drugs or you don't use drugs or a day in your life. What is it like for you to hear that? And I'm assuming you've heard that probably too in your maybe experience around the misconceptions about Hep C.
Well, I think, again, for Maggie, she never used drugs. But I think she felt dirty because of what people's perceptions are, because she had this disease. And that was part of her, I think, depression. And no matter how many times we said, no, you know, it can just happen to anybody, it was really hard for her to accept that. And then when I would say, well, I just feel guilty, she'd get all over me and say, no, Mom. And so, but she wouldn't hear it herself. So That was really hard.
What do you remember feeling, because Maggie struggled for not quite a year to get access to the medications and everything that she needed. What was it like, and she lives in a different state, not all that far away, but, you know, what was it like for you to be with her during that struggle where literally the insurance was like, nope, sorry, we're not going to go ahead and give you this cure. What was going on for you guys?
I'll try to answer that. I'm in really happy that Megan didn't find out that she was positive until there was at least a treatment available, a cure available. If she had found out when she was 15 or 17 or something, I don't know if she'd have gone to college. I don't know if her life would have been tragically changed, and she would have been, I think, ended up being clinically depressed about it. And so the fact that it didn't come out until she was about 34 years old was, I think, in many senses, a very fortuitous circumstance. And as far as it being dirty or something, she got a blood transfusion when she was a premature baby. I mean, what's dirty about that? You want to keep them alive at that age, that's all. And you didn't, well, no one knew about those things. No one knew much about AIDS at that time either. And so, in certain respects, I think we were very lucky that Megan didn't find out until she was old enough. And I personally said that Megan would persevere, and if it came down to it, we could kick up $84,000 if we had to pay for the treatment, if it really came to it. But she persevered and with help with this organization, so it didn't have to happen. I mean, she did it.
I remember having a lot of anger, too, at the drug companies saying their advertisements was, get cured today, blah, blah, blah. And yet it costs $84,000, and the insurance companies didn't want to pay for it. Well, it's real nice to say, I've got a cure. It's like dangling the carrot and jerking it back when you try to grab for it. And so, yeah, I had a lot of anger as well as anxiety and fear and sadness. But my sister and I would get on the phone and just practically scream the names of those drug companies. I guess I'm not supposed to say them.
You can say whatever you want.
Harvoni, primarily. Maggie did not get her treatment from them, and I can never remember the other.
AbbVie.
Thank you. I'm still mad at Harvoni. So.
I got a little secret for you guys. Two tenths down that way is the company who knows all about Harvoni. And you could be Mama Bear walking up and saying, hi, I'm Mama Bear. I birthed a child, and because of life-saving intervention, she's alive today without liver disease. Not because of your drug. Our buddies AbbVie did it. What do you think?
Sounds like a plan.
I'm happy to walk you over there and introduce you to some people.
Well, another thing today, given the political atmosphere, I think getting help for anybody having any illnesses that does not have $84,000 or whatever the heck one needs, it's pretty pathetic in this country today.
We're being threatened. Our care is really being threatened. And
if you don't have your health, you really don't have anything, and you don't realize that until you don't have your health.
Or it's threatened. That's right, and they hold it over your head. And so what do you, as the generation ahead of us, right, seeing what you've seen with public health and history and your daughter, what do we do now, knowing our health is at risk, knowing that there are people who have a cure available and can't get it? What do we do? Where do we go? And there's no magic. This isn't, I mean, what do you do on a daily? You know, not all of us are out there every day going to Capitol Hill, but we all of us live our general lives. What do we do in our general lives?
I think we have to hope that more politicians have kids with bad diseases, and then maybe something will be done. Because until it affects them, I'm pretty doubtful about optimism.
Yeah, I feel the same way right now. Our situation is just dire, in my opinion, and I don't know what to do about it. I want Trump to go away, but then you got Pence, and then you got Cruz, and then you got, what's his name from Wisconsin? Paul Ryan, yeah. Anyway, so.
I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a factoid here, okay? So my boss lives here in Portland, Lauren, you've met her, and you're all here in Portland, right? You live here? So a mortality report came out about liver cancer. And I'm not sure if you know this, but liver cancer is one of the only cancers on the rise because of this undiagnosed Hep C. Of the top 10 counties with the highest liver cancer mortality, 7 of those 10 are in Oregon.
Wow.
And we're talking like white men.
Wow. Any hypothesis about why that is true?
I don't know. What do you think?
I have no idea. I'm rather dumbfounded that white people aren't taking care of white people. That's really strange. And when we moved here, we didn't really have an idea about a number of things, but and for the most part, we've been able to have insurance and having good health care all the way throughout. And plus, we do a few extra things to maintain good health. But that, I'm kind of shocked. I would predict it would be Mississippi, Alabama, any place in the South.
Yeah, you'd think, if you look at the number of people who have Hep C, it's actually, I mean, anybody can get it, but way more white men than anybody have it. This is a white state.
Yeah, it's definitely a white state.
I don't see much diversity here, and I wonder, in terms of access to care and how much rural there is here, I wonder if that just keeps people away. Men often, keeps people from their doctor, and maybe their doctors don't know, and men in general, unless something's really going wrong, they're probably not going to go visit the doctor. Those are just a few of my guesses. I know it's scary, and I think that you hit the nail on the head, my friend, when you said until the politicians' kids start getting these diseases, and what is bringing this to light is our opiate crisis. Do you guys see that at all here in Portland? Have you heard about this opiate crisis?
Yeah, we've heard about it, and again, it's. I can't understand how things get so bad. It gets to be that or meth as a way of living in this country. There are so many other far more positive things to be doing, but that seems to be a route that certain people are taking.
There's a reason. The drugs in themselves. Sure, people make a choice to take a drug a first time, let's say, right? Maybe even a second time. With something like an opiate, it is such a powerful drug that the impact on the body is such that you start to experience withdrawal right away. And, you don't necessarily know what you don't know. And the high feels pretty darn good to that person. And they start to try to chase that high knowing that their body is actually addicted and has some tolerance to this drug. And so opiates in themselves, physicians play a role in being able to say, patients, what is your pain level and how can we work with that instead of giving you opiates? There's a lot of other ways to do it. And because of that, we have this, it's very easy to get opiates. You go from one pill to heroin because it's cheaper. And so at that point, and you guys see it here in Portland, man, I go under these bridges here. The homeless population here is incredible. Resilient as heck, but lots of people who are really suffering right now from withdrawal.
Yeah, we have a huge problem with homelessness. We've had three mayors, I guess, since we moved here, and they all say they're going to do something about it or try. And, it's like, what do you do? And it is a huge problem. I think part of it is Portland has such a mild climate that a lot of people come here because they can tolerate living outside. This last winter, though, we had horrible ice storms and snowstorms that lasted for weeks, and fortunately a lot of the people in the community came together to try to provide shelter and clothes and coats and all that stuff, but that's not a long-term solution. So I don't know. One thing I was going to say, my brother-in-law had a minor surgery not too long ago, and when my sister went to the drugstore to pick up his medicines, they had given him like 50, I think, opioids. And she was like, seriously? It was minor surgery. And the pharmacist said, well, that's what the doctor wrote. She said, can I get less than that? And he said, oh, sure, I can cut it down for you. So she did. And he said, but I have to tell you that if you change your mind, you can't come back and get them without. And she was like, thanks, I won't be back for these. But 50.
It's incredible. And really, there's so many other, you don't need to go all the way to an opiate in terms of, sure, we don't want people to experience pain, but there's so many other options. And it's scary, the impact of pharmaceutical companies. You talk about them saying, hey, go get your cure today, but oops, you can't get it. And here's a company saying, here's a really incredibly powerful drug. It's addictive. So, and then we just shell them out like they're Pez.
Have all you want. Yeah.
it's scary, and we are where we are, and politically we've got to come together, and you know, Hep C is sort of the disease that's like the poster child of patients who can't get access, and the discriminatory practices around restrictions, and the poster child for the disease that will be the largest infectious disease as a result of this opiate outbreak. You know, and here we have your daughter Maggie walking around and an advocate and calling out, you know, what's right and what's not. And she's not at all someone who is dealing with an opiate addiction or living with liver cancer or whatever. And it's just such an honor, really, to be sitting with the person who birthed the person who's writing amazing comics and doing just living her life is in much happier than when we met 2 years ago.
Exactly. She's a different person. Every time we talk to her on the phone, almost we hang up and go, "Wow, that's a different person than we were talking to 2 years ago." We had a big family celebration during the time when she was sick, and it's almost like she wasn't even there. She was there physically, but her mental and her spirit were not there at all. And now she's, like you say, back to life.
And what besides the cure, getting cured, would you say contributes to her just sounding like a different human?
Well, she's got a job that she loves now. She's got some really good friends. She's in a good relationship. And all the good things of life that can happen to you seem to be happening for her right now.
And I'm wondering how much sort of the empowerment, the self-empowerment and the family love that had to go into unconditional support to get her through the process, to get the drug, to get cured. Because her butt was dragging for a bit there, right? I remember that when she came out to Chicago to share her story, I remember her talking about this red couch or this red chair. And she's a professional musician. She's like an amazing classically trained pianist, and she would play every day. And as a musician, I was like, "Oh, that's amazing." And then she couldn't play. And I was like, "Wow, that's really intense." And that, from knowing that you have this disease and just putting all these pieces and really seeing the impact of other people not getting access. And she did what she could. So it takes a village, right?
About that, too, is that not only was she highly motivated, she had a lot of support. And I can't imagine if she'd have been a single person out without support from her family, without support from anybody else, she would be infected right to this day and end up possibly dying of liver cancer without the help that she would be able to get.
Yeah.
So it's... I think it is a village you're talking about. You need to have support, and certainly not condemnation or anything like that. It should be helpful. And I think Megan received that from virtually everybody.
She's a good kid.
She is a good kid. Even some of our newer friends here in Portland, when we were trying to figure out how we were going to pay for this drug, one of them just popped up and said, "Well, we're going to crowdfund or I don't even know all the terms, but they said, "We'll get a fund together."
Yeah,
and she said, "Everybody in this neighborhood will contribute." And they didn't even know Megan. So they knew us, and they knew that she was a good kid, and they felt like that we deserved all the support we could get as well, which was very helpful. At first, I didn't want to talk about it, you know. It's not because you're ashamed. It's just you just don't know what to say. But once we did start talking about it, you know, Tom and I had a huge support group too.
Well, there's serious impact in sharing stories. And there's a lot of Maggies out there who don't know that they're sitting ducks, right? And the more you talk about it, then someone else learns, and then they learn, and then they talk about it. And that's ultimately the ripple effect and change. So thank you for doing that and continuing to talk and spending time with me. I'm sort of open this up to anything else you guys want to say. Actually, how about a message to Maggie? What would you... She's not in our physical presence right now. She's a little bit further north than us. But what would you like to... message you like to give to her?
Love you more than ever. Always will. And we're so proud of you. Obviously happy that you got cured, but proud of the effort that you made and the continuing efforts that you're making. Jill mentioned the comic book that you wrote, and it's incredible, and so are you, and you always have been. So play on, sweet girl.
As a believer that a lot of things we are responsible to do ourselves, I'm really proud at how Megan stuck to the program. She stayed on the drugs even though at times she was very ill, but she hung it out, and she actually kept the empty containers up hanging on a string in her apartment as a way of counting down to the end, which was a really great idea. But I'm just simply proud that she was not willing to just wrap it up and crawl in bed and go to sleep and say the hell with everything else. She didn't do that.
Go Mags, go Maggie, go Percy, go Megan. What else do we call her?
Sweet Pea was her original name. So I'll keep playing on Sweet Pea as well. I can't think of any other.
No.
Her brother might have had some for her that I don't know about.
May not be appropriate for air. I don't know, right?
What?
His words for her may not be appropriate for air. I don't know. I hope it. Maybe not.
No, they're pretty close.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Thank you, Jill. I'm so glad you were here. That was one of our first things when we got to the festival was let's go find Caring Ambassadors and hope Jill's here again this year. So thank you again for being Maggie's friend.
Thank you for coming and stopping by. You'll have to forgive me. I saw your faces and I was like, I know you, and you had to anchor me in time and space. And I'm glad I got my squeeze and my time with you here.